Hi guys, I am in Leiden today, which is, as you can see, a pretty nice little tranquil place. We've come to Leiden, this is in the Netherlands for those not from this part of the world, because I used to live near here when I was a kid. So I had a couple of years when I was about 14, 15, living in a town close by. And a bit of time has passed since then, and I came back here recently, only a couple of years ago, because I had just coincidentally had an event here. And I was kind of like, wow, this is actually a really nice place. I'd never really thought about it, because you don't when you're 14 or 15, you want to do other stuff. But yeah, it's a great spot, and it's like the true sort of, I guess, more traditional Netherlands. It's not like going to Amsterdam and it's just full of tourists and brochures and things like that. So it's a really nice spot. And you can see we're sort of sitting next to this canal here. The bridge behind me, somewhere just around here, it says 1730. So the bridge has got some history, and we've been staying in this little place that's just over here, the one that the cat's about to go into. There's the cat. Which is a house from apparently the early, what they say, the early 17th century. So it's actually one of these sort of heritage listed places, which is pretty cool. Like, they've got these crazy beams and architecture and stuff up the top. So it's nice. This has been peaceful. We've only sort of had a couple of nights here, and we've got to go to London in a moment. But yeah, this has just been a really nice spot, and it's been really good to be back in the Netherlands. So getting back to what I've actually been doing this week, I did my last update from Oslo. This is where the kids were kindly jumping on my head as well, which was great. And that was on Saturday. And I spent a bunch of time on Saturday out with some family friends, just sort of chilling out in Oslo, going to some really sort of epic traditional Norwegian places, which was pretty cool. Then came over to the Netherlands on Sunday, did some family stuff. Kylie's half Dutch, so she's got family here, which is nice. And did the Amsterdam cruisy thing. Then I've been in a workshop. So Tuesday, Wednesday, I was running a workshop somewhere over to, where was I? Hoevelaken. So for the Dutch people, that was a little bit over, I don't know wherever we just came from. I'm starting to lose track because the trip's getting long. It was also why I still have the coffee. Anyway, so I was over there doing this workshop for a couple of days. And one of the things that came up, which was kind of interesting, was a discussion on GDPR. Now, this was a workshop that I'd done for this particular organization a couple of times before, or rather I had done workshops for them a couple of times before. And they wanted to sort of do like a second edition and do some new stuff. And because I'd recently done the GDPR course for Veronas, they said, look, can you talk about GDPR? So I did that and was talking about right to erasure. So this concept that you or I, well, so long as you're a European citizen or resident, has the right to ask the company to remove your data from their system, which to my mind just sort of sounds perfectly reasonable, right? Like it's your data. I don't want to be in your system anymore. And the organization has got to do it without cost, unless you start getting pedantic and asking them to do it every single week, in which case they can charge you a reasonable amount of money. Anyway, the premise is, and I guess the way GDPR is written, is that if someone wants their data removed, you've got to remove it from all systems. And the concern that was raised, and this was actually a very interesting one, is they said, okay, well, what about our backups? And have a think about it, the way backups tend to happen. So backups tend to get spread over multiple places. You'll have on-site backups, you'll have tapes that might be sent off-site, you might have cloud backups as well. Backups are often incremental. So what are the deltas between the last backups? And backups can span many years as well. And in fact, there are regulatory requirements for some systems where they have to span multiple years. They have to have retention periods that are somewhat long. So imagine now one person in your system says, that's it, I want out, take out all my data. How are you going to get it? Like, how are you feasibly going to go to your offsite backups, for example, which could be terabytes and terabytes in size, and drill all the way down and find that one record and delete it, or zero it out, or do whatever you need to do to remove that person's identity? And that is an enormously hard problem. So I went away that night and had to think about it, and someone sent me some interesting references. And the references they sent for GDPR effectively said, yeah, you got to do this. Now, frankly, I think this is sort of one of these points where the rubber hits the road in terms of, on the one hand, we have this government legislation. On the other hand, we have the reality of what we can do with the technology. Reading through some of the responses from people, it sort of boiled down to people saying, well, look, this may fall into the beyond technically feasible sort of realm, which would grant some leeway. Other people have said, well, we just need to be smarter about our backups, which I think is would be nice. I don't know how close we are to actually having good backup solutions that allow us to do that reliably as well. A lot of it, though, came back to the premise of, look, if this is part of a well-implemented strategy, a GDPR strategy, where an organization says, look, we're going to get in place the right roles, we're going to take the right actions to the fullest extent feasibly possible, and we're going to do all the right sort of documentation, record keeping, etc. And if you then have problems later on, you know, this sort of demonstrates there's a willingness, if you like, to comply, and it's only this one sort of technically very, very difficult piece which is going to be a problem. Now, I don't know whether that's going to be the case or not, and I think this is one of these things where it needs to be tested, right? So we need to see someone get upset enough that their data hasn't been permanently removed to actually see how big the teeth are, if you like, that GDPR has, or at least the data protection authority that's ultimately going to implement any penalties. But the bit that got me thinking then led to the Security Sense column I wrote this week. So here's the way I was thinking about it. On that premise, so on the basis which everyone seems to agree on, which is that you should have all your record keeping and everything in order, then you can demonstrate that you've been trying to do the right thing. How would most companies and individuals as well stand up if all of their security practices were on public display? Now, I'm not saying they should be. I'm not saying that all of us should go out there and say, hey, here's everything we do to protect ourselves. What I'm saying is if the worst happens and either you get the book thrown at you GDPR-wise, or as an individual, you get thoroughly compromised, how will you be judged? And I was actually starting to think about this just very recently for myself in terms of if someone, let's say someone totally owns Have I Been Pwned, they have everything, they have all my code, they have access to the servers, they have access to the Azure portal, they have the whole lot. And they were to look at it, and someone's to write something up and go, here's all the shit that Troy did. how would I look? And I think this is an interesting thing for all of us to think about, because inevitably all of us will have areas where we go, I probably shouldn't be doing that thing over there or that thing over there. I was recently thinking, I actually woke up in a cold sweat in an airplane on the way home. I was like, I've got data that I really no longer need. This was for something totally unrelated. Data I really no longer need, but if it was disclosed that I still had the data, then, you know, that I'd feel somewhat uncomfortable. So I went home and deleted it permanently, including from all the rotated offsite backups. So I think that's an interesting thing to think about, and I need to ponder it more as well, particularly because I do get targeted at times, which I guess is not surprising, and particularly given the nature of Have I Been Pwned, and especially because if it was me that got sort of totally owned, and then I'm writing blog posts and doing talks and workshops and things about how to not get totally owned, that wouldn't be a good look. But I guess part of it as well was that there was this bit of me the other day that was just thinking, we've all got to accept this as a totally feasible possibility. And I don't want it to happen. But if it does happen, I want it to be because someone was extremely creative or inventive and really had to work hard in order to get their way around the defenses and things that are put in place. And if that's the case, then look, I've done absolutely everything I possibly can. I just want to make sure that I can confidently say that. So have a think about that. Are you doing your absolute best, or would there be things where, if disclosed, people would look at you and go, wow, that was really shit? So think about that now, because it's a bit late to think about it after things go wrong. So moving on, that was my Security Sense column. Now, I still haven't written another blog post other than my weekly updates since I left Australia. I've got a couple of things in draft, and one of those things in draft at the moment is around password strength meters. And I'll explain more about this when I actually write it up. But the thing that got me recently, there was a bit of argy-bargy on Twitter where I think this was Argos in the UK, was limiting passwords to 20 characters. Someone threw a password strength meter at them in order to demonstrate how as you add more characters, it's going to take more and more and more years to crack. It was one of those ones that says, if your password is this long, it's going to take, you know, X gazillion years to crack. And Argos came back with a bit of, yeah, but a 20-character long password is going to take, I don't know what the number was. I know it had a lot of commas in it, but it was going to take like some infeasibly large amount of time to crack. And it frustrated me because it sort of missed the point, right? It missed the point that it breaks password managers. It missed the point that it breaks social practices of creating passwords, which are good, such as passphrases, assuming you create a good passphrase. And of course, it totally missed the point of why the hell are you limiting it in the first place? Assuming you're hashing, then it really shouldn't matter. So I've got a whole bunch of stuff on that. And I noticed just today, just before I kind of recorded this, there's some more guidance from NIST as well, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which says that, look, you should have a max that's about 64, I think they said, which is a nice number to choose. And it's Holland, there's bikes everywhere. They also said you shouldn't be demanding things like special characters, which is interesting because we're starting to move to a more, developed way of creating passwords and then protecting them. So, for example, if you have a great passphrase, which, mind you, may have spaces, which many people would consider special, then the requirement for special characters is kind of null and void. And just having the word password with a capital P and an at symbol and a maybe a zero for the O meets all these password requirements of so many strength meters, but let's face it, is a crap password. So anyway, I've got that in mind. The other one I've got in mind that, when I say got in mind, is in draft, is around have I been pwned in privacy? And this is a really interesting one where very, very occasionally, and I'm talking sort of, I don't know, maybe 1 in 1,000 pieces of communication, I get someone say, have I been pwned as posing a privacy risk? And the real premise here is that if you can use this system to find out which other breaches someone was in, then that could be useful information for an attacker, and they may then go off to those breaches and find people's data. Which is a valid argument. Have I been pwned as an aggregation service? So it's one place you can search and find those exposures. Not the sensitive data breaches, mind you. They're not publicly searchable. So, you know, there's that point about some of this data, when it's searchable this way, creates a risk for people. Now, that's sort of on the one hand. Then there's the other side, which is, well, by making it searchable, it makes it very easy for people to obviously find out where they themselves have been in a data breach, and they can then sort of protect themselves better. And in a way, these are sort of conflicting objectives. Now, what some people are saying is they say, well, you should do what you do with the sensitive data breaches, which is the only reason, or rather the only way anyone can see if they're in a data breach is to get an email. And they get an email and they follow a link, and then it sort of shows all the results. And this, I understand why people are saying it, but they haven't really thought through the ramifications of that. So for example, usability sucks. Okay, you've got to wait, get an email, maybe it goes to junk, because I tell you what, it's very, very hard delivering email reliably, particularly when you have the word pwned all through it. So there's that. The other thing is, even as it is, email is one of the hardest, most expensive components of the service. If I had to send one every single time someone does a search, that's going to be problematic. Then the other issue you've got is it completely breaks the API ecosystem. So all the other organizations out there that are using this in very good, positive ways, within the rate limit which is there to try and stop people from abusing it, that breaks for them as well. And there are the mitigating factors. There is the rate limit I just mentioned. There are things like the sensitive data breaches, which already implement that model, and a raft of other things that I've spoken about both publicly and have not, that I guess mitigate the risk. Now, I'll write this up in more detail, and you'll sort of see the arguments in a sort of more carefully constructed way. This just came to my head because I've mentioned I haven't done any blog posts for a while, haven't published any for a while. But I guess the point is, more than anything, when I put this out there, I want to sort of indicate that it is something I give a great deal of thought to. And I wonder, how do I do this responsibly and reliably and actually make it useful for people whilst not making their lives worse either? So, look, that's it for the updates. In terms of what's coming, I'm going off to London, let me see, in a few hours from now. I'm still with my family, so we're going to chill out there for a few days and do the touristy things, which will be nice. I'm doing a couple of free user groups as well. So I'm going to be doing a user group in London on Tuesday night. I'll put a link to that in this update. And then in Southampton, I can't remember if I said Thursday or Friday. Anyway, I'll put a link to that. So I'll be down there as well later next week. And that will be my second last week, after which I come back here to the Netherlands, and then I go home, which will be awesome. Lastly, sponsor this week is Terbium Labs. They do a bunch of funky dark web scanning for various things and help organizations figure out where they are exposed or at risk. So go and check them out. Really appreciate having them here. They have been a previous sponsor as well, and it's nice to get sponsors coming back again. It means something must be going well for them. So big thanks to those guys, and I will see you next week from Southampton in the UK. Thanks, guys.